Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we'll tell you about a contentious meeting of the Grossmont Union High School District Board, in which the board weighed in on whether to spend $250,000 of taxpayer money on a legal appeal. Learn why a dissenting board member accused the board majority of bad faith, and why the board president, in turn, accused a neighboring district of trying to steal taxpayers' money. One day after a Texas judge blocked President Obama's immigration reforms, we have details on just how many people here in San Diego are being impacted by that ruling. We also have news about a Homeland Security report looking at the effectiveness of drones patrolling the border, and the findings may surprise you. Advocates of community choice programs say that ratepayers save money when they can buy from alternative power suppliers other than major utility corporations. Voice of San Diego did some fact-checking, and we'll have their findings in today's Green Scene report. Our newsmaker interview today is with Pine Valley resident Tom Biggers, a voter who visited Senator Joel Anderson's office to ask a few important questions, such as why the senator wants to run against Supervisor Diane Jacob, why he took money from a property owner who's also his landlord, who owns land where a controversial energy project would be built and then pushed to support that project over the objections of his constituents. Those seem like reasonable questions to many folks, but you won't believe the answer Mr. Biggers got back from his senator's office, which prompted us to dig out some more fascinating findings about Senator Anderson's finances and his ties to special interests. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about the top festivals and events coming up across our region, from Black History Month celebrations to a St. Patrick's Day race in East County. Today we also have a very special and serious report on an alarming worldwide rise in anti-Semitism and violence targeting Jews, including right here in California, so stay tuned. On our Crime Beat report, we'll have details on a drive-by shooting in Spring Valley that remains unsolved. And we'll take you on a road trip to the Desert View Tower in Hakumba, one of East County's quirkiest landmarks. We'll also tell you why local firefighters will be holding a boot drive coming up soon. And finally, for Heart Health Month, we'll have some heart health tips for women whose symptoms during a heart attack may be very different than what men experience. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, because East County matters. The Grossmont Union High School District Board has voted 3-2 to appeal a court injunction forcing it to set aside $42 million toward building a high school in Alpine. The district has already spent $100,000 on legal fees, and the appeal could leave taxpayers footing the bill for $250,000 in legal bills that the district could lose. The vote taken at the board's February 11th meeting was preceded by rancorous accusations and contentions. Board members Priscilla Schreiber and Jim Steeringer voted against the resolution. Several times during the meeting, Schreiber expressed concern that the board had voted twice to set money aside for the project and that it was acting in bad faith. Steeringer said he opposed an appeal because the decision to set aside $42 million for the high school is well-reasoned in his view. The vote comes on the heels of a January 22nd ruling by Superior Court Judge Joel Pressman that says the district must set aside $14 million in bond money immediately and another $28 million by January 2016 for the building of a high school in Alpine. The decision came in response to a lawsuit filed against the Grossmont District by the Alpine Union School District and the Alpine Taxpayers Association, enjoining the district from spending money on a project other than building a high school in Alpine with funds from two recent voter-approved school bond measures, Prop H and Prop U. Shields stated, "This lawsuit injunction is going to be one of the most serious issues facing the district for the next decade." He accused the Alpine taxpayers of preventing the district from doing, quote, "what I believe is our responsibility and job." The county grand jury had faulted the Grossmont district for failing to use funds from the two bond measures for the long-promised Alpine High School. In a report titled "Fool Me Once, Fool Me Twice," the grand jury instructed the district to either set a clear timetable to build the high school by the end of last year or support unification of the Alpine Union School District so that it could become a K-12 district and build the high school. But the district defied the grand jury recommendations. Alpine parents now want to split the Grossmont district apart and join a unified Alpine district. The County Board of Education found in favor of the Alpine parents and has recommended that the state support the unification effort. Shields slammed the Alpine district, stating, "I'm trying to defend our district from a poorly run district trying to effectively steal money from us." Superintendent Ralph Swenson outlined the consequences of the judge's ruling, claiming it would cause delays in replacing outdated heating and air conditioning equipment at West Hills High, modernizing facilities at several schools, building new events centers at Grossmont and Santana High Schools, and delaying upgrading campus security and safety systems throughout the district. But critics of the board's actions have pointed out that their community has safety concerns, too, in Alpine. Several students have died in accidents driving long distances to schools or after-school activities. Prop H was passed as the Safety and Overcrowding Initiative, and Prop U was passed to finish items not completed with Prop H funds. Alpine education advocate Bill Weaver says Prop U bond money has been spent on a new performing arts center at Helix and other non-safety, non-essential, non-bond-listed projects that are being constructed, like the beautiful yet grandiose Olympic swim facility at Granite Hills High School. Those projects are nice, he points out, but they are not essential and certainly not safety upgrades. This raises an intriguing question. If the district felt safety and security issues at other schools were so essential, why did the district spend funds on non-essential projects instead? And why did it halt plans to build an Alpine High School after declaring eminent domain to obtain the property for that school? The district has argued that bond language in Prop U stated that a high school for Alpine would be built after enrollment at the existing high schools exceeds 23,245 students. The district says that when the trigger was met, it had not acquired the land yet for the school, and now the enrollment is below the threshold. Presently, the district has 21,576 students and does not expect to return to the enrollment trigger until after 2020. In the lawsuit, the plaintiffs allege those enrollment numbers were met during the 2008-09, 2009-10, and 2010-2011 school years. Both Schreiber and Stieringer expressed their concern that the expense for a legal appeal could reach upward of $250,000. Shield responded that it was worth spending money on the appeal. He said appealing the injunction could save East County homeowners $1.3 million a year in interest on the $42 million ordered to be set aside, an order that he calls the epitome of wasteful spending. Shield, along with trustees Jim Kelly and Gary Woods, pushed through the resolution that also included a paragraph stating that the Alpine Union School District could be forced to spend up to $750,000 if it chooses to pursue the litigation against the Grossmont District, adding insult to injury for Alpine parents who have already waited over 20 years and approved two bond measures with the intent to build a high school for their children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A ruling by a Texas judge that halts President Obama's executive orders to protect many undocumented immigrants from being deported will directly impact half of the 181,000 undocumented immigrants living in San Diego County, according to the Migration Policy Institute. The institute, which is based in Washington, D.C., estimates that 91,000 San Diegans would have been eligible to apply for protection from deportation. On Tuesday, immigrants and supporters held a rally at Christ the King Community Catholic Church in San Diego, chanting, "Si se puede," or "Yes, we can." The Obama administration has said it will appeal a judge's decision. San Diego Democratic Congressman Juan Vargas, who spoke at the rally, said he believes the ruling will be overturned. But local Republican Representative Daryl Issa supports the judge's ruling, which halts the president's immigration reform until a lawsuit filed by 26 states works its way through the courts. Issa claimed the ruling recognized the direct damage and irreparable harm of what he says are unconstitutional executive orders issued by Obama, though presidents have long wielded executive powers. The Texas judge did not rule on whether or not Obama's actions are legal. Instead, the ruling temporarily freezes expansion of two programs, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, which protects immigrants who came here as children, and another program called Deferred Action for Parents of Americans and Lawful Permanent Residents, or DAPA, which would offer similar protections to many parents of children who are U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Those programs had been set to take effect in late February and May. Speakers at the rally included Guadalupe Noriega, who was 14 when her mother brought her to San Diego from Mexico. She now has a son who attends the University of California, Merced, and says that gaining legal status would mean she could have a better job and help her son with his college studies. The rally was organized by Alliance San Diego and Service Employees International Union. Kristen Ramirez, Human Rights Director at Alliance San Diego, vowed, "We are going to be moving forward to make sure that every single San Diegan gets the benefit that they deserve from the actions of the president." The groups criticized San Diego's Mayor Kevin Faulkner for not joining in efforts to file a brief in support of the president's executive orders, as a dozen states have already done. UT San Diego reports the mayor's office issued a vague statement indicating the judicial ruling demonstrates that the current approach is not providing the legal and legislative certainty that families in San Diego and across the country are looking for. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Leon Thompson.
The Department of Homeland Security's Office of the Inspector General has issued a report which slams the use of drones by the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. Homeland Security's report concludes, after spending 8 years and hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars, U.S. Customs and Border Protection has yet to prove the value of its unmanned aircraft system program while drastically understating the costs. Based on these findings, Homeland Security's Office of the Inspector General recommends that the Border Patrol abandon plans to spend another $443 million on drone aircraft and instead put those funds to better use. In its second audit of the program since 2012, the Inspector General found that the Customs and Border Patrol Office's Air and Marine program has not achieved its intended results. Its impact on stemming illegal immigration has been minimal and comes at a high cost, with no reliable way to measure performance either. Specifically, the Inspector General found that during fiscal year 2013, the Office of Air and Marine calculated it cost about $2,500 an hour to operate a drone. But the Inspector General found that was actually a huge underestimate, with the actual price tag more than $12,000 an hour when costs such as salaries and overhead were added in. Flight times fell far short of the original goal to have drones flying 365 days a year, 16 hours a day. In fact, they only flew 22% of that time, and they were often grounded due to bad weather. Customs and Border Patrol touted drone surveillance to be for the entire southwest border, nearly 2,000 miles from Texas to California. But actual drone deployment was mainly limited to a 100-mile stretch in Arizona and 70 miles in Texas, meaning there was virtually no benefit from the program to border security efforts here in California. Overall, drones were credited with assisting in less than 2% of apprehensions of people crossing the border illegally. Homeland Security Inspector General John Roth concludes, "Notwithstanding the significant investment, we see no evidence that the drones contribute to a more secure border, and there is no reason to invest additional taxpayer funds at this time." He adds that while securing our borders is a crucial mission for both Customs and Border Patrol and Homeland Security, the drone program so far has fallen far short of being an asset to that effort. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with our Green Scene Report. The nonprofit media outlet Voice of San Diego has run a fact check on claims that community choice programs result in lower prices for consumers. Consumer choice aggregation programs allow consumers to buy power produced by renewable sources directly from cooperatives instead of from utility companies. The fact check found these claims are true. Voice of San Diego looked into the question after Nicole Capretz, head of Climate Action Plan in San Diego, one of the groups advocating to start a community choice program in San Diego, appeared on NBC San Diego and said that programs in Sonoma and Marin have been extremely successful, and they've been able to provide lower rates to all residences and all businesses in Marin and Sonoma with a higher renewable energy content. Voice of San Diego compared rates for customers of Marin Clean Energy and Sonoma Clean Power versus rates paid by customers at PG&E and found the community choice programs offered lower rates in every class, from industrial to low-income residential, with greater reliance on renewable energy, drawing 33 to 50% of their power from renewable sources versus just 27% from PG&E. San Diego Gas and Electric charges even higher rates than what any other utility in California charges its customers, according to the figures from the California Public Utilities Commission. So local ratepayers stand to save even more if a community choice program is implemented here. Community choice programs use collective buying power to negotiate lower rates for consumers who are automatically opted into the program unless they choose to return to the utility company. Utilities have tried to squelch the automatic opt-in option through legislation that failed to win passage in Sacramento in 2014. Mayor Kevin Faulkner has said he will take up the issue of giving San Diegans a community choice option later this year. This has been East County Magazine reporting on KNSJ.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. State Senator Joel Anderson has announced that he is planning to challenge Supervisor Diane Jacob for the supervisorial seat in the upcoming 2016 election. Both of them are Republicans, and there's been a lot of questions asked about why Senator Anderson would challenge a fellow Republican in this race, a very popular Republican to boot. Supervisor Jacob won by 88-89% margins in her last couple of elections. My special guest today is Mr. Thomas Biggers, who is a resident of Pine Valley, and we're going to be talking about what happened when Mr. Biggers tried to ask some important questions of Senator Anderson. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you went into the senator's office, and this was around the time of the big vote on the Soitec solar projects that Senator Anderson had sent a letter to all of the supervisors urging them to support this project, which passed 4-1 with only Supervisor Jacob voting against it. These were the large industrial-scale solar projects in Boulevard to be built by Soitec companies on property that in part is owned by the Hammond companies, as background listeners. So, Tom, tell us what happened when you went into the senator's office.
Well, I went into his office to ask him some questions. I had four questions to ask him. Number one was, why would you run for county supervisor and take the job from Diane Jacob when you are both Republicans? Number two, I asked him, why are you for the solar project in McCain Valley when most of the people in the East County are not for it? Number three was, why is your office built office right above the office of the company you are trying to put in the solar project in McCain Valley?
The Hammond companies.
Hammond owns part of the land on which the Soitec projects would be built.
And number four is, why are you taking campaign contributions from them?
And those are very good questions. As a reporter, if I could have had some face time with Senator Anderson, I would have asked the very same questions, and certainly other media is raising the same questions. Now, you received what, to a lot of folks, is kind of a shocking answer here from the senator's office, a letter signed by his district representative, Jocelyn Cuesta, who, by the way, we've called to request comment for this story. She wrote you back a letter on February 6th, and it says, "Dear Mr. Biggers, you have the right to speak freely in this country about any issue you wish. Unfortunately, your phone call from February 5, 2015 introduced the notion of bribery. The senator prohibits team members from any communications or meetings with anyone who believes they can bribe him. Senator Anderson works to uphold the highest ethical standards for his office and cannot be bought. Such a suggestion, even in passing, is an affront to the integrity of our open democratic institutions and will not be tolerated. If you contact our office in the future, we will not respond." Now, first of all,
Did you call his office?
No, I went into his office. They're wrong. I did not call on this.
And they say they don't want any communications or meetings with anyone who believes they can bribe him. Did you attempt to bribe the senator?
No, I just asked those four questions.
And that was it.
And apparently I lost my citizenship.
How did that make you feel when you got this letter?
Very upset. I was very mad. But then I decided to settle down. And I just couldn't believe that somebody would write you a letter like this. I've never seen anything like this in my life.
Yeah, I have to say I haven't either as a reporter that's been in this business for over 30 years. Your letter never mentioned bribery, but it did allude to money that he has taken from these companies. Now, we have some figures here. I haven't actually had a chance to look up the most recent contributions, but he gained a lot of notoriety back in 2009.
During his campaign for the state legislature,
when it was exposed that he had taken a very large sum of money from several entities, including $48,000 from the Hammond companies and members of the Hammond family,
as well as local Indian tribes.
The maximum you're allowed to give to a candidate for state senate in California at that time was $3,900.
So $48,000, $30,000 from Hammond Companies and the Hammond family alone is quite a bit over that.
It was funneled illegally, some would say laundered, through the Fresno Republican Central Committee. And when the FPPC found out about this, he was fined $20,000, and he gave that money back.
Although as part of the settlement, he did not admit to any wrongdoing.
Are you bothered by the fact that he doesn't seem to be concerned about
taking $30,000
from the Hammond Company and then lobbying on their behalf to the supervisors, and yet he accuses you of bribery or bristles at the thought of you even mentioning these questions when you as a constituent, a voter, walked into his office and asked them?
Apparently I hit a sore spot with him, didn't I? I didn't even know that he had done this until after somebody gave me the information. Before I asked the question, I knew nothing of what he had done with that.
Interesting. Now, it should be noted that this is not the only special interest that has raised eyebrows regarding Senator Anderson. He is also the statewide chair of ALEC, the American Legislative Council. In fact, they voted him their legislator of the year. ALEC is financed by large corporations, especially the oil industry, pharmaceutical, tobacco companies, and the billionaire Koch brothers. And its goal is to provide legislation that benefits corporations and to get model legislation introduced into various state legislatures. It also has been a forum for climate change deniers and some other things. They push through legislation for insurance companies, tobacco companies. Another interesting thing is that a Valley Center newspaper has noted that on the opening day of the legislative session this time around, Senator Anderson wasn't there for the votes. He was back in Washington, D.C. at meetings with insurance industry lobbyists.
Isn't that wonderful? We wonder why nothing gets done in our state. He's too busy out doing things they shouldn't be doing.
Now, Project Vote Smart reports that Senator Anderson has failed to take their political courage test. He has refused to provide voters with positions on key issues covered by the 2014 political courage test, the Courage Campaign notes, despite repeated requests. And what it measures is lawmakers' willingness to provide citizens with their positions on key issues.
Well, that's a shame, because apparently he doesn't want anybody to know what his position is.
Yeah, it's interesting that he doesn't seem to be coming out as an announced candidate for supervisor stating what his issues are, why he wants that position, why he believes perhaps that Supervisor Jacob doesn't deserve re-election. These are reasonable questions. And yet, we should note that the San Diego County Republican Party has just endorsed Senator Anderson over longtime incumbent, 25-year or so incumbent, Diane Jacob.
Well, I can't understand why they're doing that, and it really upsets me. And I've always been taught that you you live by your word is your bond, and apparently a lot of politicians don't think that way. Their word is not their bond.
For the record, Tom, did you vote for Senator Anderson?
Yes, I voted for Senator Anderson, but I will never vote for him again.
I would like to talk to you a little bit about the Soytec project specifically, which proposes to cover about 1,100 acres in the Boulevard area and along scenic highways out there with industrial-scale solar panels that each measure 48 feet wide by 30 feet tall. There's been a number of issues raised, one of the biggest being the impacts on the water table. What are your specific concerns as a Pine Valley resident about this project in Boulevard?
Well, the project, to me, should not be done because it's insignificant of the amount of electricity they'll get. It'll be very ugly for the area, and they're taking our water, which we shouldn't have enough water to be selling it to these people.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's been a lot in the media. We've certainly covered the concerns that the project would deplete groundwater below what could be replenished. Millions and millions and millions, tens of millions of gallons of groundwater that they admit would be used. And they're relying on estimates of a company that has severely underestimated on many other projects. The hydrologist from San Diego State and an additional hydrologist hired by citizens concerned about this both concluded that the project could cause massive ecological harm. But it isn't only groundwater from the Boulevard area. They've been talking about buying some water from the Pine Valley Water Company.
Yeah, and what they'll do is run these big water trucks on a historic highway in Pine Valley to fill them up. And that highway was built in 1926. 3 ton is the limit. These trucks with water full of water are now 33 tons. So they're 30 ton over what they should be. And I have a feeling that the highway will be wrecked and us taxpayers will have to pay for fixing it.
Interesting, because Senator Anderson has always called himself a tax fighter. His PAC is called Tax Fighters for Anderson, or his campaign committee, rather. Do you feel that he's looking out for the interests of the taxpayers out there in Pine Valley?
No, I don't. I think he's looking out for himself. Whoever gives him the money, he's looking out for them. Us taxpayers, I don't think he cares about us.
Speaking of costs to taxpayers, by the way, Senator Anderson is termed out in 2018, but with a supervisorial election in 2016, if he were to win and defeat Supervisor Diane Jacob, that means taxpayers would have to foot the bill for a special election to fill his Senate seat.
That's correct, and we can't afford what we're doing right now, and he wants to give more money, you know, cost more money for us taxpayers.
Do you have any final thoughts on this whole issue, Tom? We'll give you the closing words today.
Well, I just think that the Board of Supervisors who okayed this project didn't look into it very closely, and they seem to be going by special interest, too. You only have one vote against it, and the rest are voting for it. And I'm not happy with the County Board of Supervisors either.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
Thank you.
And I will close by stating that we have reached out to Senator Anderson's office, and we certainly invite him to come on the show. We would love to hear from him about just why he is running for supervisor and what he plans to do that would be in the interests of the taxpayers out here in his district if he were elected.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Well, Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes celebrations of Black History Month rock and roll concerts, a star party, a sweetheart dance, and more. Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine. Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents Murder at the Howard Johnson's each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in February, with a final performance on March 1st. This suspense comedy features love, betrayal, and mayhem in a plot about an ill-fated love triangle and three botched murder plots. For tickets and details, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Rock and roll singer Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band will perform in concert at San Diego State University's Open Air Theater on Wednesday, February 25th at 7:30 p.m. Best known for the hit song Night Moves, Seger has been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. For details, visit sdsu.edu.
Author Hamsay Warfa will be at the San Diego State University on Thursday, February 26th from 7 to 9 p.m. to share his book, America, Here I Come, A Somali Refugee's Quest for Hope. The story narrates his escape from a civil war that claimed the lives of over 2 million people in Somalia to becoming a respected author here in the United States. The program will be held in the Arts and Letters Room 101.
In honor of Black History Month, the Grossmont College Chorus will perform a chorale reading of Margaret Walker's poem, For My People, on Thursday, February 26th at 7 p.m. The program will be held in Building 26, Room 220. The event is free and open to the public.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities in East County are slated for Sunday, March 15th in downtown El Cajon at Main Street and Magnolia. Choose from a half marathon, a 5K run, or green mile competition to compete for a large cash prize pot, medals, and free drinks after the races at the St. Patrick's Beer and Wine Festival. There's also a leprechaun challenge for racers dressed like leprechauns vying to win a costume contest. For details, visit stpatrickdayshalf.com. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on an alarming rise in violence targeting Jewish people worldwide. Last week, a young Jewish man was shot and killed outside a Copenhagen synagogue, targeted for his faith. In Paris, as many as 250 Jewish graves were desecrated in recent days. And here in the United States, at the University of California in Davis, right here in California earlier this month, swastikas were sprayed on a Jewish fraternity house after a demonstration by pro-Palestinian students. One of those students proclaimed on her Facebook page that Hamas and Sharia law had come to the campus, prompting 23 organizations to demand an investigation to protect the safety of Jewish students on our campus. These are the latest in a string of hate crimes targeting Jewish people around the world. 2014 was a year of unprecedented anti-Semitic violence, the Simon Wiesenthal Center reports.
The center concludes that anti-Semitic violence poses the greatest challenges the Jewish people have endured since World War II, when 6 million Jewish people were exterminated by the Nazis. Last year was the year of ISIS, lone wolf terrorism, targeted murders and rapes of Jewish citizens in European democracies, and anti-Jewish demonstrations in the streets of Europe, as well as on college campuses here in America. Many Jews are now fleeing Europe, fearing they have no safe future in their European homelands after hundreds of violent physical attacks, many of them deadly. Mark Stein, writing in Jewish World Review in January of this year, warns, "The Jews are always the canaries in the coal mine, so they won't be the last in Europe to discover that when it matters, the state isn't there for you. Indeed, in nations such as Iraq and Egypt, Jews were the first to be violently attacked and driven out of the country before the far more widely publicized attacks and displacement of Christians in those regions by the same Muslim extremist forces. During the shooting of cartoonists and others at the French magazine Charlie Hebdo, the Islamic terrorists also seized a Jewish deli, killing 4 people. In 2012, a rabbi and 3 schoolchildren in France died in an attack in front of their school, the Washington Post reported, prompting high security at schools across France, and now some schools are denying admission to Jewish children in France. Other French Jews attacked recently include a disc jockey whose throat was slit and eyes gouged out, a schoolgirl beaten by a mob chanting "Jews must die," and a young man tortured to death over 3 weeks by assailants who phoned his family and forced them to listen to his torment, Jewish World Review reported. Numerous other sources in the media report other disturbing crimes, including an arsonist setting fire to a kosher market, a kosher restaurant that was firebombed, and 2 Islamic female teens who were arrested for plotting to blow up a synagogue, all in France, once a bastion of freedom and safety for Jews formerly persecuted by the Nazis. The editor of Britain's Jewish Chronicle told the Daily Mail that every Jew he knows has left France or is actively working to leave. Nearly 7,000 French Jews have moved to Israel this year alone, double last year's level, a rise fueled by safety fears, Tablet magazine reported in January. After the recent attacks in Paris and in Copenhagen, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu responded by inviting European Jews to take refuge in Israel, stating, "We are preparing and calling for the absorption of mass immigration from Europe," the New York Times reports. But Israel is far from a permanent safe haven, with Palestinians and many Arab and Middle Eastern nations committed to the destruction of the Israeli state. For instance, Iran's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei last year called for the annihilation of Israel, Slate magazine reported. While the Israeli-Palestinian situation is certainly controversial and has ignited criticisms of both sides, the attacks on Jews worldwide have not been limited to those supporting the Israeli government, faulting all Jews for the actions of Israel. Moreover, the assailants have failed to recognize the free speech rights of people in Western nations to support political causes regardless of popularity, seeking to kill or silence through intimidation all who disagree with pro-Palestinian views, and even some Jews who have criticized Israeli policies. In fact, Jews have been targeted solely for their faith across Europe and other parts of the world, including here in the United States. Anti-Semitic attacks are on the rise in Germany, despite strong laws there prohibiting hate speech. Last year, 184 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in just 2 months, the Wall Street Journal reported. Violence included torching a synagogue and attacks by anti-Israel protesters on Jews in the streets of Berlin. Dieter Graumann, president of Germany's Central Council on Jews, told The Guardian, "These are the worst times since the Nazi era. On the streets you hear things like, 'The Jews should be gassed, the Jews should be burned.'" Britain's chief rabbi, Lord Jonathan Sacks, told BBC Radio that many rabbis have been assaulted and attacked on streets of Europe, and Jewish schools have been burned to the ground by people seeking to silence or even ban Jewish societies on campuses. The Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs in 2004 reported a rise in anti-Semitism across Europe that included firebombing of Jewish schools, desecration of synagogues and cemeteries, and verbal attacks. And in 2005, the U.S. State Department warned of high rates of attacks on Jewish people, even in seemingly permissive societies such as Sweden and the Netherlands. The Netherlands, site of the recent Copenhagen attack, has among the highest incidents of anti-Semitic incidents in the European Union. The country, once home to Anne Frank, whose heart-wrenching diary of hiding during Nazi occupation has been read by millions, yet once again, her country is no longer safe for Jews. The situation is so dire that in 2010, an Orthodox rabbi in Amsterdam, Raphael Evers, said Jews can no longer be safe in the city anymore due to the risk of violent assaults. In Norway, the Norwegian Broadcasting Company did research and found Jew hatred prevalent in 8th to 10th graders. Students praised Hitler in the schools, denigrated teachers trying to teach about the Holocaust, and reportedly took one child out to the woods to hang him because he was a Jew, though fortunately the child escaped. In Malmo, Sweden, a synagogue was set on fire, worshippers abused on the streets, and cemeteries desecrated. Masked men chanted Hitler in the streets. Now Jewish children must attend schools blocked by thick steel security doors, the London Telegraph reports. At rallies, flags of Hamas and Hezbollah are waved in the streets while Israel's flag is burned. The Simon Wiesenthal Center, a Jewish rights group, issued a travel advisory in 2010 warning Jews to use extreme caution if visiting southern Sweden. The mayor of Malmo has been accused of failing to protect Jews there and allowing young Muslims to harass Jewish people, according to the Telegraph. The European Jewish Congress's president in 2012 called these earlier attacks tremors before a massive earthquake. He asked that European nations react with legislation to halt incitement and terrorism, as well as violent activities against Jews. But instead, those activities have escalated. These alarming trends are also happening in North America. There have been anti-Semitic attacks on synagogues, schools, cemeteries, Jewish-owned homes, and businesses across Canada, according to the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. Here in the United States, Time magazine has reported that 60% of all of the 1,166 religious hate crimes investigated by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, in 2012, targeted Jews, who faced threats in America from homegrown white supremacists as well as from Muslim immigrant extremists, violence that has spilled over to harm others. In April 2014, a former Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan murdered three people near Jewish community centers in Kansas City. The killer in that case, a raging anti-Semite who for decades advocated the extermination of all Jews, missed his mark, however. The victims he gunned down, ironically at the Jewish community center, were not Jewish. Hate crimes against Jews in America have most often been property crimes. According to the Anti-Defamation League, including 315 acts of vandalism and 31 acts of violence reported to their call centers in 2013 alone. But not always. Last year, a rabbi was killed in Florida on his way to religious services, and mourners at his funeral found their cars defaced by swastikas. In 2012, a New York City commemoration of the liberation of the Auschwitz concentration camp was disrupted by pro-Palestinian demonstrators, prompting Councilman David Greenfield to chastise the disruptors for showing that they were, quote, not only anti-Israel, but displaying naked, blind anti-Semitism. ABC News reports recently that a Jewish-owned business in Washington, D.C. has been receiving phone calls threatening mass murder. Most recently, at UC Davis in California, pro-Palestinian demonstrators harassed pro-Israeli demonstrators and swastikas were sprayed on a Jewish fraternity house. A symbolic vote calling for divestiture of University of California funds from Israel was pushed through by Muslim students, though UC Regents have said they do not support that resolution. A member of the Student Senate, Azka Fayaz, proclaimed on Facebook that Hamas and Sharia law have taken over UC Davis. Hamas is designated a terrorist group by the U.S. State Department and the United Nations. Last week, Assemblywoman Shirley Weber from San Diego was reappointed chair of the California Assembly Select Committee on Campus Climate. We asked her office for a response to these anti-Semitic incidents at UC Davis. The committee's purpose, after all, is to assure that campuses of state universities and community colleges have policies to assure the safety of everyone and the safety for the free expression of ideas. Weber's spokesman, Joe Kusarik, told East County Magazine, "We are also committed to campuses where differences do not interfere with mutual respect required for civil discourse and a productive learning environment. The reports of incidents of heckling, intimidation, inflammatory speech, and the appearance of swastikas on the UC Davis in conjunction with the recent divestment vote are abhorrent," he said. "We understand the UC administration and campus police were fairly swift in their response. We've been meeting with stakeholders, and the committee will continue to monitor the administration's response and the police investigation into this matter." A survey in 2007 by the Anti-Defamation League found 15% of Americans held anti-Semitic views. Globally, the Brandeis Center reports that a recent Anti-Defamation League study found there are now 1 billion adult anti-Semites in the world. Now that's approximately 1/7 of the entire world population. Experts believe the alarming rise in modern anti-Semitism is being fueled largely by an influx of Muslim immigrants from Arab nations, although their outspoken words and actions are also emboldening homegrown hate groups such as neo-Nazis and white supremacists. Now, certainly there are some Muslims who respect the rights of all people to practice their faith, or who at least would stop short of condoning violence on those with different views. But media too often downplay the very high rate of Muslims who do hold anti-Semitic views, particularly those who are in or from the Middle East. Robert Bernstein, founder of Human Rights Watch, says anti-Semitism is deeply ingrained and institutionalized in Arab nations in modern times. And a 2011 survey by Pew Research, conducted in all Muslim-majority Middle Eastern nation countries, confirmed that. It found that the number of people there with positive views of Jews ranged from only 2% to 4%, compared to the U.S., where 82% surveyed said they have positive views of Jews. Moreover, dialogue with Middle Eastern media at times resembles Nazi propaganda. Newsweek has reported that Jew hatred remains culturally endemic. Muslim clerics in the Middle East and elsewhere are often referring to Jews as descendants of apes or pigs, citing Quranic verses, and also calling Christians swine, according to the Anti-Semitism Documentation Project published by the Middle East Media Research Institute. Some clerics are even calling for the deaths of all Jews. Textbooks in many Muslim schools also refer to Jews and Christians in these derogatory terms, as well as spreading propaganda referring to Jews as miserly or greedy. One Saudi text blames Jews for wars in modern times and predicts an apocalyptic fight that will end in victory over all Jews. A Saudi newspaper suggested that hatred of all Jews is justifiable. A U.S. State Department report in 2008 found a rise in anti-Semitism worldwide, CNN reported, as did a 2012 report by the U.S. Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, the State Department has reported, in 2013. Kenneth Marcus, President and General Counsel of the Louis D. Brandeis Center, wrote in an article published on the center's website, "To ignore the dangers of resurgent worldwide anti-Semitism is to misunderstand the ways in which we will all be touched by developments around the world, whether we choose to recognize them or not." In the past year alone, the Wiesenthal Center's list of the 10 worst anti-Semitic actions included a Belgian doctor refusing medical help to a 90-year-old woman with a fractured rib, telling her son to send her to Gaza. In Paris, anti-Semitic assailants conducted a home invasion, tying up and raping a Jewish couple, insisting that Jews always have money. In Hungary, where over a 500,000 Jews perished in the Holocaust, the mayor of one town hanged Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in effigy. An anti-Semitic political party is gaining political power and influence in Hungary as well. And in Belgium, a cafe hung a sign reading, "Dogs welcome, Jews not." In Brussels, demonstrators chanted, "Death to the Jews." Terrorists murdered three rabbis outside a Jewish museum in Brussels, attacking them with axes and meat cleavers, leaving them dead in a pool of blood. Three of those rabbis were American citizens. Jew haters have increasingly also sought to deny historic fact through Holocaust denial. Israel was established by the United Nations as a safe haven for Jews after World War II, so Holocaust deniers seek to discredit the legitimacy of the Israeli state as well as reduce empathy for crimes against Jewish people. The United States Holocaust Museum Memorial has detailed information on its website documenting the Holocaust tragedies and advising the public how to recognize and combat Holocaust denial. Holocaust denial is actually a crime in many European nations, but it is tolerated in the U.S. due to First Amendment free speech protections, unless the messages incite actual violence. For Holocaust survivors and descendants who lost loved ones in the Holocaust, as well as to Jewish people everywhere, the growing anti-Semitism and violence targeting Jews are frightening, chilling reminders of a past all hoped they would never have to face again. A troubling aspect of this rising tide of hatred against Jews is the lack of coverage by major media. When three Muslim Americans were shot and killed by a neighbor in North Carolina over what authorities called a parking dispute, the story made national and international news headlines. Recent deaths of black men at the hands of police sparked rallies across America. But where is the international media attention, the global outrage over the cold-blooded murder and systematic efforts to terrify Jews around the world? Even in the U.S., many Americans are unaware of the blood being shed by Jewish people under attack across Europe or their near extermination in the Middle East, where ISIL terrorists who first persecuted Jews are now conducting genocide targeting other faiths, driving 1.5 million Chaldean Christians from their homes, for example. So what can be done to reverse this rising tide of violence, hate crimes, and intimidation targeting Jewish people? The Simon Wiesenthal Center urges people of good faith everywhere to commit in 2015 to break the apathy and silence and to stand up and speak out against history's oldest hate wherever it rears its ugly head.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
The countywide firefighter boot drive is the biggest and most important fundraiser of the year for the Byrne Institute. Firefighters from over 40 departments will grab their boots and congregate at nearly 100 intersections on March 4th. Virtually every fire department in the county is participating, so look for them in your neighborhood. Each year, they generously give of their time to raise funds to support these programs and services, including sending burn-injured children to a special camp for burn survivors called Camp Beyond the Scars. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
February is National Heart Awareness Month, and today we have some important heart health news for women. Did you know that heart attack symptoms in women can be quite different from men's? Heart disease is often thought about as a man's disease, but recent studies show that heart disease is actually the number one killer of women in America. Getting immediate, appropriate care is the single most important thing you can do to lessen the damage of a heart attack. Why? Because every minute of delay means more heart muscle is damaged. Also because within the first few hours after a heart attack, if untreated, there is a higher risk of fatality. Some symptoms of heart attack are the same in men and women. These include squeezing chest pain or pressure, shortness of breath, sweating, tightness in chest, pain that may spread to the neck, arm, or jaw, a feeling of heartburn, and sudden dizziness or brief loss of consciousness. But other symptoms are more likely to occur in women, such as indigestion, dizziness, nausea, unexplained weakness or fatigue, discomfort or pain between your shoulder blades, recurring chest comfort, or a sense of impending doom. If you have any of these signs, you should seek help immediately. Have an action plan in case of a heart attack. Always call 911 immediately. Give CPR if the patient is not breathing. get to the hospital quickly. The longer it takes to get treated, the more badly damaged the heart will be. And if you don't know CPR, find a class and sign up. It's easy to learn, and it can save lives after a heart attack. Use of an automatic external defibrillator can increase the odds of surviving a heart attack dramatically. 60% of patients who receive defibrillation with an AED will survive a heart attack, versus only 10% who are revived using CPR alone. Contact your doctor for a heart-to-heart talk, and for more information, you can visit heart.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Friends of the Descanso Library need volunteers. If you're interested, please visit the library's website or call 619-445-8814. The Descanso Library is located at 9545 River Drive in Descanso. This has been a public service announcement for Friends of the Descanso Library. Reporting for KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Leon Thompson.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
There's some good news this week for fans of Dr. Seuss, the beloved San Diego children's book author who died in 1991. Three new manuscripts have been discovered that were written by Dr. Seuss, whose real name was Theodore Geisel. The three long-lost manuscripts were found by Geisel's widow, Audrey, shortly after he died at his La Jolla home, but were set aside and rediscovered recently. Random House Publications and the Geisel Heirs announced this week that the first of the three books, titled What Pet Should I Get, will be published July 28th, Times of San Diego reports. The book features the brother and sister characters that Dr. Seuss introduced in One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. Titles of the other two books have not yet been announced. Audrey Geisel is pleased at the news that more Dr. Seuss works will be available for readers, with the original newly discovered materials housed at UC San Diego's Geisel Library. She called the news especially heartwarming since this year marks the 25th anniversary of the last Dr. Seuss books to be published. Oh, the places you'll go. And yet another treat for readers, Random House has also announced that it will soon release Dr. Seuss works as e-books, providing yet another medium for readers to delight in the whimsical stories that have delighted generations of children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.